Okay, so this week, double parsha Achrimoyz Kedoshim. We got to close the doors there. Keeps, you got to close the doors. And in both parshas, it discusses here on the reading of the article in chapter 18, and Achrimoyz says forbidden relationships. And then in Kedoshim, it says penalties for forbidden relationships. So we have the idea that the Torah warns us. The Torah warns us don't have this forbidden relationship. And then it tells us the punishment for it. So, like, for example, let's see what this starts out with here. My Lord, my decrees, Hashem, your God. First one is close relatives, a person's father, their mother, real, you know, forbidden relationships. And that all makes sense. And and the penalties as well. A man who committed adultery with a man's wife, with his fellow's wife, he'll be put to death. Real serious crimes on some of these forbidden relationships. Now, in general, we make the clear assumption that we're not going to get into the nitty-gritty, but there is a debate. At what point does the prohibition take place? Because, for example, we'll assume, is it as the beginning of the cohabitation or toward the end of the cohabitation? And we're not going into that. We're just saying that the cohabitation itself is what is forbidden. It also might be forbidden to do little things like hug and kiss. But we're not discussing that right now. Well, it's a whole list of people. So it's a sister, a mother, an aunt, a married woman, a woman who's impure because of a nikvah. It's like a whole long list. It's over a page. Sisters, aunts, and two types of aunts, right? And that's the forbidden relationship. So we're going to use that as a segue because I was scrolling through the RabbiHelman.com and I found a question about a year ago that I never got to finish. I'm like, hey, you know what? Let's go back to that one. That's what we're going to do now. So the Jerusalem Talmud has a fascinating thing. Now, as we've discussed in the past, not all forbidden relationships create children that are, in the Jewish word is mamzer. So, you know, they have an English term for it, with a thought for the B, but it's irrelevant. But the word mamzer is a child who comes out of this forbidden union, not all forbidden unions, but the argument actually which forbidden unions, but okay. Whenever a child has that label, innocent child has the label, then he has certain restrictions. The most obvious restriction is going to be on who he can marry. A mamzer cannot marry a naturally born Jewish citizen.
There's something he could do, though, right?
There is. The Mishnah discusses, because the problem with the mamzer is, or mamzeres, female or male, doesn't make a difference who comes out of that relation, boy or girl. They both carry this spiritual, we'll call it just for English, genetic flaw. And that genetic flaw is always passed on. So once a mamzer gene is in a family, it goes on for eternity. And again, there are going to be certain issues, who they can marry. There are other minor issues and stuff like that. So what the rabbi suggests,
mother side or father side needs to come down.
Either way, that's what I'm saying. Either way, the mamzer gene is carried from either side, not like in the genetic where they have, you have a mother and father have to carry that gene to produce a child with it. Either parent is a mamzer, the child is a mamzer.
So if the parents get divorced and she's no longer married to a mamzer, she marries a regular yid, their kids are normal yids.
Yes.
It's not like she's already tainted because of her.
Excellent question, by the way. Excellent question. The mamzer is produced from a forbidden union. Not those people who produced it, in a way, are not labeled. And the Gemara discussed why they're not labeled. They only produce labels on children. And when students in the past have asked me, oh, it's not fair, it's not fair. I'm like, yes, but it's not fair when a kid is born without legs, and nobody seems to have a problem with that. I'm saying, is it more of a problem that we labeled someone a mamzer as opposed to, God forbid, someone born physically without legs? They're both questionable equally. That's what I'm saying. They're both a question or not a question, depending on how you approach it, right? But the spiritual defect, when everyone says, well, the parents did something wrong, why is the kid affected? Okay, that's what a lot of things, I'm saying, that's the way the world goes. I mean, that's a greater picture as we believe.
Isn't there a way?
Oh, so how do they do it? So there is a way that the Mishnah says, the famous Reb Tarfin.
Slave.
Oh, so what they do is like this, because in the end, but it's a weird thing. Did we discuss that? I don't remember now. But in order to get rid of the gene, the fact is people don't want to pass on negative genes to their kids. So how do you get rid of it? So the reality would be is if it's a male only. A female mamzeres, every child comes out, boy, girl, for generations. The male can marry a converted non-Jew almost, but not really, and he can have a child with a non-Jew. That's what it really is, with a slave woman. It's a slave woman. We'll discuss that in a second. With a slave woman, and then that child is hers, 100% hers. The genetics go after her 100%. Let's pick an easy case, a non-Jew. If he has a child with a non-Jew, then that child won't carry the genetics of a mamzer. The problem is the child's not Jewish. So in order to avoid the non-Jewish problem, what they do is they get this non-Jewish maidservant who is considered Jewish on some level. So the child is Jewish, but cleansed of this mamzer default, if that's the right word. What about nowadays? There are mamzerim nowadays as well. People have all types of weird
That's a
relationships.
big problem.
It's a big problem. So can you use this answer? Can you find a maidservant? So it became a question. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, who, as we've discussed many, many times, had shoulders that no football player in the world can imagine. He had great shoulders. So in America, I don't know if you're aware of this, but as of 1860 something, you are not allowed to have a slave or a maidservant. It's illegal in America. So what are you going to do then? But Rav Moshe Feinstein had a major leniency. He said that the reason, it's like, wow, he said like this: in order, when you have to follow the laws of the land, is because the land sets up basic laws, and that you have to run a society. In order to run a society, you need basic rules, or else society doesn't run, right? You need to know that the red light, everyone's going to stop, or else you'll have a lot of car accidents every day, right? So one of the things was, it made sense to say, we don't want slaves. That's a moral approach that says, why should people be slaves to other people? So that makes sense. America decided to abolish, what's the word, abolish? Abolish slavery. Good move, good move. But if someone wants to volunteer to be a slave, so I don't know about American law. It's irrelevant. Ramosh is saying it's irrelevant. In American law, it could be you can't volunteer. I have no idea or not. I don't know if it's ever been
You
discussed.
can volunteer.
I don't think you can anyway. But Ramosh was saying that in Jewish law, you can take the non-Jewish law and say it doesn't apply in this case because the person doesn't want it applicable to them. That means because the law was made of abolishing slavery to protect people, and someone says, listen, I'm more protected the other way, you can choose to override the law privately and then do it. So you find a mamzer. I'm not looking for them, but you have someone who's, God forbid, a mamzer. So has what he doesn't want to pass on that gene to his kids. What he would have to do is find a girl who likes him and put them into that position, which is not as easy as it sounds. Make them into a maid servant, have the children, and then free her as a maid servant, and then the kid becomes a regular Jew who doesn't have this label. The reverse negative of that is that the man is not fulfilling his mitzvah peruvu. That's it's a two-edged sword. That means you're allowing the child not to carry on this genetic spiritual flaw, because you're basically saying the child's only hers. But if the child is only hers, he has an obligation to have children. He can't have children.
He converts when he's 13.
So when a family converts,
Like
then the
this.
children count. But if someone has a child with a non-Jew, and then that child converts, the father cannot count it. Why? Because it's a quirk. It's a quirk.
What?
As for his
He still
fulfillment of the mitzvah.
converts.
Every male has an obligation to produce a boy and a girl. Right? Every male is obligated to produce a boy and a girl. If a person was not Jewish, which means, and he married a non-Jew, which is fine, that's legal, 100% legal, and they produce children, and then he converts, what happens to those kids? We can allow those kids to count toward the father's mitzvah.
Not converted.
Argument between Tosfos and the Rambam. So let's get this straight here, because we're doing a lot here. Yes.
Just
A non-Jew who has a has
man or woman come on.
both now. Two non-Jews have a boy and a girl. And now women are not obligated. So the father converts. The Talmud says that the father can count his non-Jewish children toward his fulfillment of the mitzvah. Rambam and Tosfos argue, what does that mean, he converts? What about them? So the Rambam requires them to convert as well. Tosfos says no, it doesn't say those words in the Gemara. So either way, by the way, when a person converts, he's considered a newborn baby. He has no relatives. Technically, a convert can marry his sister in Jewish law, his genetic sister, because it's not a genetic sister. Because in Jewish law, every convert becomes
But
familyless.
she's
That's not
not
even a word.
Jewish. But she's not Jewish if he converted.
Who, the kids or his wife?
You said he could marry his sister technically.
His sister's not
Well,
Jewish.
yes, I meant if they both converted, correct.
If they both converted, they could get married.
Biblically speaking, the rabbis came along and said, no, this looks weird.
You can't be Jewish and be grosser than the goyim.
Right. No, I'm serious. That's what it is. The
That's
rabbis came along and said, you know what? Ah, bad look. Bad look. Now, I don't know if anyone wanted to do it. Maybe back then people were into this stuff, like in Rome and stuff. I think all the kings married their sisters. No? So it could be back then it was more. Nowadays, I don't think the rabbis have to be too concerned about this. But anyway, it's set up. It's a rabbinical issue. I'm not whitewashing rabbinical prohibitions. I'm just saying, so biblically speaking, that's not his sister. Biblically speaking, he can marry her, potentially even his daughter. Biblically speaking. So the question is, wait a second, if you can marry this girl because she doesn't do you, then why are you allowed to count her as your child relevant to the mitzvah, peruvu? When someone converts, they're now obligated in 613 mitzvahs. One of those mitzvahs is produce a boy and a girl. So the wild thing is that a convert, it's an argument of the Gemara, but we rule that a convert can, yes, well, maybe we'll discuss it tonight. We'll discuss why in a minute. It's a good idea. that a convert can count his non-Jewish children. Now, maybe they converted also or not, Rambam versus Taisus, but even if they converted, they're not his children in biblical law for other, but we're going to count it for yes, for producing children. Now, why should it work that way? The obvious question, well, it's not your kid, why does it work? That's a bomb question, right? If we consider the child not yours, you can marry the child, and you're considered a newborn who has no familiar relationships whatsoever, then why do we allow the father to count the two kids? So there's an answer by the Mechas Chinuch, which really answers five other questions. So we'll do questions first, then the big answer, or questions first, then the big answer. Okay, we'll do the answer first, then we'll see how it answers everything. But Mechas Chinuch, if you never heard of the Mechas Chinuch, you have to leave the class almost. Almost for sure you have to leave the class. But anyway, the Mechas Chinuch says like this. What is the fundamental concept of fulfilling the mitzvah approval? How do you fulfill the mitzvah? So you have no, you, all of us, not you, us, everyone in the world, has no ability in a normal manner to produce children. I mean, you have to rely on God in the end. That means you could buy a lulav and shake a lulav. You pretty much in, I'm not saying you have no control of yourself, but you're pretty much in full control of that situation. Obviously, you still have the movement in your hand. You still need constantly God to give it to you. Every morning we make the blessings on that, but on a normal manner, it's yours. But producing a child, and clearly producing a child of a specific gender, seems very out of your hands. So the idea is like this. How does it work this way? So the Mechas Chinuch has a famous concept. It's one of the first big ones in his Sefer. And his Sefer is this. The fulfillment of the mitzvah approval. At what point do you fulfill the mitzvah? Let's go through it slowly. This is what he's asked. At what point do you fulfill?
30 days of baby.
So you're agreeing it's not cohabitation. Because that cohabitation, no kids here at all. 9 months later, when the kid comes out, or he wants to add on, wait a second, a kid would be a boy and a girl. The second one, you have twins. Let's just go with easy case, guys, twins, boy and a girl. It would be when the second one comes out, by the way. Right? Or he's saying, excellent, excellent. 30 days later, when they're considered solidified as we could trust them as being alive. Or we discussed last year, a child who is incapable of producing children does not count. I mean, everyone has to produce, every male has to produce a boy and a girl. Of the boy and girl, that they have details as well. Among those details, they must be able to produce a child. So some want to say then. That's how I'm extending your question. So it's not cohabitation. It's not birth. It might be 30 days later, or it might be when they hit 13 and 12. We assume that's a natural situation. Until 13 and 12, they could be what's called an islandess. I don't know if there's a word in Hebrew. Yeah, it's terrible. Usually at 12, 13, you realize the person could develop normally. You assume, but yeah, right. But according to them, it would be when they produce children.
But
that's a long way out. So the Mechas Chinuch says, no, none of these things count. The Mechas Chinuch says, the mitzvah is fulfilled when someone has children. Having breathing children is the fulfillment of the mitzvah. That's what the Mechas Chinuch wants to say. The relations...
You're not getting into IVF, are you?
That's an excellent question, but no, but maybe we'll get there if you remind me soon. The Mechas Chinuch uses this idea, which he proves it with, in five different ways. One of them is what we just said. He said, he has a question. We know the rule when it comes to matzah. If someone is sometimes normal, sometimes crazy, he has episodes, and on Pesach night, open Talmudic passage, he eats matzah at 8 p.m. when it's dark outside, but he's in his vegetative, whatever the word is, altered state of mind, where at that moment, he's not obligated to any commandments. When someone is considered insane, a shota, he's not considered anything. So you have this person who's, it's not bipolar, whatever it is, extreme. Or you want an easier case.
Dementia.
Dementia is going. Oh, much. That's even easier.
Or he drank too much wine that night.
Dementia is easy. I was going to say, if you need to be 13 years old exactly, not everyone, there are some rules this way. Some say you don't reach bar mitzvah until 13 years, not 17 hours before 13 years when it gets dark outside. When's your bar mitzvah? When it gets dark outside or when it hits that moment when you were born 13 years early? Let's say, yes. Let's say it's 13 years exactly. And a guy was born in the morning. So Passover night, because he's born at 12 o'clock at night, it's easier. Passover, when the Seder starts, he's not 13 yet. So when he eats, he's not biblically obligated to anything. But at 12:01 now, he becomes obligated. So according, but or early onset dementia, you're in and out. So when someone is out until 10 p.m., but they ate matzah because the abusive child was saying, eat matzah, it's a mitzvah.
Rabbinically, maybe. They satisfy rabbinically.
I wouldn't be hitting those people to matzah when they're like that. But okay, maybe. And then
common
they wake
case
up,
is.
whatever the word is, I don't know what the word is, they would have to eat matzah again because everything they did in the altered state doesn't count. That's an open Talmudic passage on every mitzvah, by the way. We're talking about matzah. The Gemara brings the example of matzah. When somebody eats matzah, it applies to anything. If they put on tefillin in altered state, they would have to put on again. So the Mechas Hanukkah says, wait a second, not his question. The Tzur Eved asked this question, Shagasaya, 150 years earlier. He says, I understand something. A non-Jew has seven Noach laws. You know what he doesn't have? He doesn't have an obligation to produce a boy and a girl. So the non-Jew produces a boy and a girl as what? Considered altered state. And then later on, he converts, and let's say the kids convert. Who cares, he says. When he had the child, he was in altered state. He was not
obligated. He wasn't obligated.
But altered state means not obligated. Correct. Altered, by the dementia means not obligated, and by the non-Jew means not obligated. Correct. So how does he fulfill the mitzvah? Because eating matzah, the obligation is fulfilled when you eat the matzah at that moment.
Regardless of intention.
So if you're eating the matzah and someone's not liable, someone's not obligated at that moment because they're not well, then what they did is irrelevant. But by pruvu, by procreation, having a boy and a girl, it's not the action of creating the child. It's not even the birth of the child. It's not 30 days after the birth of the child. It's having a living boy and girl. So when the person converts, at this moment, he's now obligated. Guess what? He has a boy and a girl who are alive as well. That's what he wants to say.
They're not Jewish. You didn't answer that.
But he has to convert. Yes. They have to convert to be Jewish.
My argument, Rambam and Tosfos.
I thought he loses ownership.
But he has children. The words used us to answer your question is that he has a connection to, which means like this. Doing a lot here. Yes. A Jew male who has a child with a non-Jewish female, the moment the child comes out, there is nothing there. It's 100% her non-Jewish child. 100% her non-Jewish child. When a non-Jew has a relations with a non-Jewish woman and they have a child, at that moment, they're all related to each other. Non-Jewish people have families, of course. In Jewish law, forget non-Jew. In Jewish law, non-Jewish people have families. They inherit each other. A non-Jew might be obligated in respecting parents. Yes, a non-Jew. We would not allow a non-Jew to have relations with a sister. We don't allow that. Why not? Because we believe they have a family. We believe non-Jews have families. So that means when the kid came out, there's a family unit right now. But the father's not obligated in the mitzvah to produce a boy and a girl. Okay, but he has a family. When he converts, and he now becomes obligated in the mitzvah, 613 mitzvahs, he now becomes obligated in all the mitzvahs, he also now has a boy and a girl. It's even though he converted, and it's technically he has no more relationship, and he's allowed to marry them on some level, but there is a familial relationship when it comes to the concept of having children. He technically has children. That's what he wants to say. Now, he answers a few with this,
so
by the way.
Retroactive. Once he converts,
well, okay. You could say retroactive. You don't need the word retroactive, but yes.
His children are his children.
They were his children as a non-Jew also, though.
As a non-Jewish male who converts, those are his children.
But they were his children when he was non-Jew before he converted.
But
it was irrelevant as far as the law of Puruvu. It was relevant for other things. The son inherits the father. A non-Jewish child inherits. You can't go to every non-Jew. If you have an option, you see a non-Jewish neighbor pass away, God forbid. And you're like, in Jewish law, we don't believe in our family. I don't think I'll just take the keys to the car. No, it does not work that way. The son gets the daughter gets the keys to the car. Because we believe in the family unit for non-Jews. The Mechas Hanukkah uses this to answer another question. We're discussing here illegal relationships, forbidden relationships. The Jerusalem Talmud openly states that if someone has a child, pick a case, his sister, it's just the easiest one. Someone has relations with a sister and produces a child. Yes, they have 11 fingers. Irrelevant. No, yes, I'm saying they produce a child. The Jerusalem Talmud says that child counts for Puruvu. A male has to have a boy and a girl, but he doesn't have to have a boy and a girl from the same wife. He can have a boy from this wife and girl from this wife. That's fine. He has to produce two children. If he has a child, one child or two, it doesn't make a difference. One from a sister and one from a wife, boy and a girl, he fulfills the mitzvah. Because the phrase of the Jerusalem Talmud is, the child mamzer is his child for all laws. That means that child mamzer comes out, hates his father. What type of creepo is my father or mother? Guess what? He cannot hit his parents. Keep it of aim applies. Either they're bad people, they're weirdos. Doesn't make a difference. He will inherit his parents, even though they're weirdos. He also helps his parents. Father is obligated to fulfill the mitzvah approval. So about 400 years ago, they came with a very good question. We have a general rule in Judaism. You cannot fulfill a mitzvah through a transgression. If you steal a lulav and shake it, how much credit do you get?
Zero.
Zero. Why? Because we don't allow you to fulfill a mitzvah through stealing. Because what? So the question becomes, the guy who has relations with his sister, guess what? That's a serious transgression. So who cares that he has a kid afterward? And you say the kid counts. The kid doesn't count. It's a separate reason. It's called a mitzvah fulfilled through a transgression. It's no different, question, before we get to the end, no different than the guy who stole the lulav. If you are shaking a lulav that was stolen because at this moment you're fulfilling a mitzvah through the thing, it doesn't work. So it doesn't work this way either.
Would the kid be considered a
A bamzer, yeah, of course. So how does it work? So the Mechassana gives the same answer. Because in order for a mitzvah to be nullified, disqualified, when fulfilled through a transgression, it has to be simultaneous. So, for example, if you're not allowed to carry on Shabbos, where there's no Erev, and let's say you carry your lulav to shul, you weren't supposed to. You're not allowed to carry your lulav to shul on Shabbos in a place with no Erev. And now you're davening, and now you shake the lulav. You, yes, fulfilled your mitzvah. If it's a stolen lulav, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah. What's the difference between stolen and carrying on Shabbos? Very good. Because stolen, guess what? Every second you're holding someone else's item, you are an actively continuous thief. So while you're shaking it, you are shaking a lulav that is actively be stolen, which means you're violating it through the transgression.
You don't
When
make
you
it clean
carried
to
it to
zero.
shul an hour ago, hold on, when you carried it to shul an hour ago, and now you're holding it, that doesn't count. Before it's quiet. So the Mechas Hanukkah says, I'll tell you like this. Forbidden relationships, you know when they apply? When you're having relations with your sister. During the act of cohabitation is when the guy violates the act. When does he fulfill the commandment of Puruvu? Child's born. So it's not simultaneous. So the Mechas Hanukkah said, this is no different than the guy who carried his load to shul. So the Mechas Hanukkah already uses it for two answers. One is how a non-Jew counts. He says, because the non-Jew is actively related to this kid and he has the kid. How do, what about the forbidden relations? Because right now it's the mitzvah is being fulfilled now when the forbidden relations happened 9 months earlier. Bowden, what was your question? Well, that wasn't his question. Was somebody else's?
Kenyan
What?
Gazela. Kenyan Gazela.
What about
It doesn't become his. Once you steal it, it doesn't
there
become
are
yours.
ways. There are ways to yes. There are ways that when someone steals something in Jewish law, it becomes his. And he would be able to then fulfill the mitzvah. But let's give an easy example. The easy example would be when the item changes somewhat. So when you're stealing a lulav, you don't want to change that item because you have a kosher lulav right now. By changing the item, it now becomes not kosher if you physically cut off a part. So there, yes, you can possess the item on a certain level, but it's not as easily done as a lulav. That's why I'm using the lulav as an example. You're not going to be able to own it and it'll still be kosher. That's the problem. So we have now two answers to Mechas Hanukkah. The Mechas Hanukkah has a third explanation. The Talmud says that if someone produces a boy and a girl, and then 15 years later, when we know they're healthy people, the kid passes away, one of the two, it doesn't make a difference. The father no longer fulfills the mitzvah. So the Mechas says, why not? He had a, what do you mean? I ate the matzah, and then a week and a half later, I throw up. Not, 10 minutes later, if you eat matzah, throw it up, odds are you fulfill the mitzvah matzah. So who cares if the kid passes away 13 years later? The Mechas Hanukkah says, I'll tell you why. Because the mitzvah is not about the relations or producing the child at the moment of birth. The mitzvah is fulfilled when the guy has the children. The non-Jew has children when he converts. The person who tragically has kids who pass away no longer has these children. So if he no longer has these children, they don't count. So the third thing he explains, that Gemara. He explains the convert. He explains the guy who wasn't 100% healthy. He explains forbidden relationships, and he's explaining the kid who passes away. He also now says, practically speaking, there's a huge difference. Because Puruvu is one of the commandments that the Rambam says. Maybe we'll discuss what that really means. But on the simplistic level, Maimonides writes that someone has to have intent, proper intent for the mitzvah of Puruvu. Which means if you're shaking a little, but you're not thinking about the mitzvah, you probably fulfilled your obligation. Because most of the time, the action alone takes over. You don't actually need to have special intent for the mitzvah. Now, how many people are having the proper intent during cohabitation to fulfill the mitzvah? The Mechas Hanukkah is saying you don't need intent during cohabitation. There's no mitzvah then. The mitzvah is at one point when the children are alive. Maybe when they gave birth, you could say it that second. But he says more than that. He says you don't even need intent. You know why? Because a non-action doesn't need intent. Any mitzvah that's non-active doesn't need intent. So he says, I don't know what the Rambam's talking about. The Rambam, he gives a different answer what it means. The Rambam saying intent would only make sense if you all cohabitation is a mitzvah. But if having a child, that you're not doing anything at that moment. If you're not doing anything, there's no thing as intent. Intent is tied to an action. The action needs intent. If having a child exists, then you don't need intent. Because that's not called having intent. What about during the cohabitation? That's a regular question. Do you need intent during the preparatory act? Guess what? When you buy your lulav, do you have to have intent? Probably not. When you're baking your matzah, maybe there's an exception. Maybe it was a bad example.
When we're buying our matzah, we're looking
right.
for some sale at you know, bingo.
Exactly. Right. You don't need intent that I'm buying the matzah. No, because that's a preparatory act. I don't even know if buying would even be preparatory, even less. So anyway, fundamental number one on how it ties into this week's parasha of the forbidden relationships is that the mitzvah, according to the Michel Sinach, it's a classic Michel Sinach. According to Michel Sinach, the mitzvah of procreation of a boy and a girl is not the cohabitation, but is the having the boy and the girl who exist. Their existence is the fulfillment of the mitzvah. And that existence makes a difference in multiple practical laws that seem to exist. It answers many laws. The convert, the one who's not 100%, the one whose kid passes away. I forgot the other ones I already said tonight. A bunch of other ones. The intent, because the mitzvah is to have the children.
I got
to
ask a question.
Yes.
All right. Now you said, let's say...
If I didn't do it last Friday night, keep it PG.
But you say,
keep it PG.
You said, let's say a child dies 15 years later.
Yes.
All right. So they didn't fill them.
They no longer fulfill. They did fulfill while he was alive.
Now, wait. I'm going to make it even... I'm going to say, let's say the kid passed away 50 years later.
Same thing.
75 years later.
The Michel Sinach writes that if someone's kids pass away later in life, doesn't mean they're physically capable, but at that moment they would be re-obligated to fulfill the mitzvah. They're no longer fulfilling it. They would have fulfilled the mitzvah for all the years they were alive. Now, happens to be, you can fulfill the mitzvah if a kid passed away through the grandchildren. So if the kid got married and produced a child and then passed away, you could rely on the grandchildren. That's a whole set of laws itself. But in a regular case, you would then be re-obligated. Not a big deal. Let's say at 13, God forbid, they find that the kid's sterile. So at 13 now, the parents would be re-obligated in the mitzvah. Until then, we go by majority. Majority of kids are not. We're good to go. Now we find out otherwise. Start it over. That happens by a lot of things. You weren't obligated, now you are obligated. So someone who's early senile, so the first 20 minutes they weren't obligated, 20 minutes later they are obligated. Now they're not obligated, they are obligated. That's the way it was. That's fine.
So are you saying, let's say the parents are 95 years old and the kid died at 8?
Without kids.
Without, they're supposed to try to have a child?
I don't know what supposed to try means. They would be obligated in the mitzvah.
But they wouldn't be considered to.
I mean.
Option count?
Did we discuss that once?
Maybe.
Don't have to do that next week. That's a great one. The Talmud says that adopting a child is ke'ilu yolda. As if they birthed them. Is that a word? Birthed them in a verb, yeah. As they birthed them. God willing, that's next week's class. Because that's a whole other class of how that works. Yes. So that would mean in that case, correct. So again, a 95-year-old, again, limited things. Like we always say, you know, someone out of hand doesn't have to put on tefillin. Go complain to God. What do you want from me? Not me, God forbid. I'm saying someone. People are not obligated to everything. If he has children or grandchildren, he fulfills it. If he doesn't have the children or grandchildren, you want to know if the great-grandchildren count or if he's newly obligated. I'm not sure what his question is. The mitzvah is to produce two children that can produce children. That means technically, once the children have children, he is no longer obligated. Even when he has children, no longer obligated. But let's go with the harder way. Children produce children, and now he has two kids and two grandchildren, he's no longer obligated to the mitzvah. If they have produced more, that's great. If God forbid something happens, then it restarts.
Now, if let's say he has grandchildren, then his children pass away.
Then he's good.
He's good. And let's say then his grandchildren pass away.
That's a question by the later authorities. Can the great grandchildren take the place of the grandchildren? Who took the place of the children? Okay, maybe next week is adoption. Not bad.
Bye.